Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is overthinking everything. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside of the United States and Canada, you can dial 001-760-918-4300, and that'll get you through, and I will bring you on. But we're going to begin, as we always begin, with me kind of setting the table and talking about overthinking everything. And it was funny because I did actually come on about 3 minutes before the show started, and I had to ask Mike in the studio, like, what's my show? What are we talking about today? And it shows how far I've come in terms of overthinking from when I began the show. So I've been doing this show, I think we're in our 12th year or something insane like that. And when I used to do it, I remember when Reed, the head of Hay House, first asked me to do it. I had done some radio before, but I don't mostly done interviews. So this was going to be my first sort of call-in show. And I figured I had about 12 weeks in me. I figured I could stay interesting for 12 weeks. I realize I'm setting myself up because you may be sitting there going, yeah, you probably were right there. How'd you make it to 12 years? But I thought I had about 12 weeks of interesting material. And so before every show, I would prep for a couple of hours and I would print off scripts of things that I'd written that I thought were relevant to the topic. And I would kind of run through, okay, here's what I'm going to do if I only get a couple callers, and here's how I'll keep them on for longer. And here's what I'm going to do if I get a lot of callers, and here's what I'm going to do if I don't get any callers. And I would overthink the show to the point where it was actually kind of exhausting to do. And I thought, oh, you know what? 12 weeks is going to be all I've got in me. Not just because I can't stay interesting beyond 12 weeks, but because, you know, this just takes so much work. And then what happened was a couple of things that were separate, but looking back on it now, I can see how between the two of them, I began to learn something. And the first was one of my first books, You Can Have What You Want, came out. And I was interviewed by a guy named Joey Reynolds, who had a show forever on WOR in New York City. And I went in and I noticed that he didn't have a script. Like, I mean, he had a computer in front of him, so I thought maybe he had scripts there, but he just talked and talked and talked and talked, because I was there watching him before I came on, and then I was there with him. And I actually asked him after the show, I said, so what's on your computer screen? Are you like, do you have scripts? And he actually had sports up, like he was watching sports on his computer while he was doing his show. And I kind of thought, oh, well, he's been doing this for so long, but it made an impression on me that he could hold a show for, I think he did 3 hours at a time, without scripting it. Now, I couldn't make it through a 50-minute show without scripting. And then what happened one day is I was out and about, I got stuck out, and I didn't get home in time to prep the show. And I was like, oh no, this is going to be a disaster. And to my surprise, not only was it not a disaster, it was one of the best shows I'd done, because it was real in the moment. It was live in the moment. What happened had never happened before and would never happen again like that. And it made me think of back in my days of working in sketch comedy, where we used to do festivals. And sketch comedy is like Saturday Night Live, if you know that, where it's scripted, and then the other kind is improv, like Whose Line Is It Anyway, where you know, it's theoretically at least not scripted. And what I'd noticed in my years on the circuit was that the best improv comedy was funnier by far than the best sketch comedy. But just most improv comedy wasn't that good which is why I had always thought sketch comedy was funnier, because there was something about what is of the moment. There are things that can only happen when I am in conversation with you that would never come to my mind if I was talking to myself. That would not come to my mind. People often ask on if they're thinking about coming on a workshop. We got it a lot in New York, New Jersey. So we've got these an evening talk called The Performance Principle in New York City on June 1st. I think it's on June 1st. It's on June 1st. And then on the 2nd and 3rd, we're doing 2 days called Getting in the Game in Morristown, New Jersey. And one of the things that people were asking about this workshop, and you can find out more if you go to michaelneal.org/game, you'll find the information online. But one of the things people were asking was like, well, will you be covering this? Will you be talking about this? And my honest answer was, well, if you're there, yeah. 'Cause that's what's going to come up when I'm in the room with you, which might be different than what would come up if I was in the room and you weren't there. Because what's coming up is coming from the moment. Now, why am I talking about this in relation to overthinking everything? I did not realize that I was overthinking. I thought I was preparing. I thought I was being professional. I thought I was doing my due diligence. I didn't realize that it was cutting me off from this in-the-moment responsive intelligence that if we let it, will guide us and take care of us every step of the way, whatever we're doing and wherever we're going in life. Numbers to call if you want to get in, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside of the United States and Canada, 001-760-918-4300 will get you in. Now, what constitutes overthinking? Well, to a certain extent, anything that fills up my bandwidth and makes it harder for me to hear in the moment responsive intelligence, in the moment wisdom, in the moment common sense, is overthinking. So I remember my friend Kathy Casey was doing a session on the Inside Out Understanding for beginners, for people who were new to this conversation. And I walked into the training room just as she was finishing. And she, you know, I obviously wasn't there for the session, but I saw that she'd drawn these two stick figures on a flip chart at the front of the room. And one of the stick figures had like a little curly line coming up from the top of his head, sort of like a long bit of hair. And there was a sort of a circle on top of his head that the squiggly thing was coming out of. And the other person had a squashed circle and the squiggly line went up off the top of the flip chart and on into space. And I looked at that picture and I went, oh my God, that explains everything. Now, I didn't even know what the context was or anything else. But what I saw when I saw those images, and if you read The Space Within, I recreate my version of those images in the book, The Space Within. You can also find it online. There's a YouTube video I did called How to Not Be a Moron, MOR (open parentheses) EON, which I'll explain or not explain as we go. But what I saw in those two drawings was a truth about how human beings work, how our minds work, that we all have this space in our head. That was the circle on top of the first person and the squash circle on top of the second one. You could call it headspace. There's a very popular meditation app called Headspace. You could call it bandwidth. I notice I call it that a lot these days, which is, you know, our capacity for fresh thought, our capacity to handle different things. So when your bandwidth is full, when you have very little headspace, anything feels like a problem. Right? Anything new, anything unexpected is problematic. But when you have headspace, when you've got a lot of bandwidth, you can handle multiple things. If you think about a computer, right? A computer that has a lot of RAM can handle multiple apps open at the same time. It's got the bandwidth to operate multiple apps without losing speed. But if you don't have much bandwidth, if you don't have much available RAM on your computer, you know, even having one extra file open can slow it down to a crawl. Well, it's the same with us. And what fills up our bandwidth is thinking, right? And it's mostly thinking about stuff that doesn't really need to be thought about, because in the moment, we would just respond appropriately if we had the bandwidth. So when I saw those drawings, the first drawing in my mind, and I checked with Kathy, and this is in fact exactly what she was drawing, but the first drawing was just a drawing of somebody with a lot of headspace, a lot of bandwidth, and a bit of thinking, like, you know, whatever thinking that was probably vaguely relevant to whatever they were engaged in, right? So if they were doing a radio show, it'd be thinking that was relevant to what they were doing in the radio show. If they were going into a meeting, it would be thinking about that was relevant to that meeting. If they were a plumber, it would be thinking that was relevant to the plumbing job that they had, and so on and so on. The second person, the bandwidth was squashed, right? The headspace was limited because there was so much thinking going on. There was so much overthinking, where the thinking wasn't just about what was going on. The thinking was about what might go on, what had gone on in the past. The thinking was about other things that would be going on differently in the future. And then there's a whole category of thinking about how much thinking you've got and how you shouldn't have so much thinking and how you'd be better off if you didn't have so much thinking. And at some point, your head is so full of noise that there's no room for wisdom. There's no room for this in-the-moment responsive intelligence. There's no room for comedy. There's no room for fresh thought. There's no room for the new. There's only, because all the space is taken up with all your thinking about everything. Now, most people, when I show them that or talk to them about that, they get it. Right? They get the idea. They understand. But they'll often say, so how do I not overthink? Or how do I stop thinking? Or how do I get better thinking? So let me take each one of those in sort of reverse order. Better thinking, and then stop thinking, and then not overthinking. So better thinking is probably the number one thing people think they need. Like, I need better thinking about this, right? That's why we do affirmations, because we think our thinking is really negative and we want to put better thinking in. Or we'll go to a cognitive behavioral therapist, or we'll go to an NLP practitioner and we'll ask them to help us better thinking. Or we'll go on a positive thinking seminar and they'll teach us their ways to get better thinking. But the problem is, if that better thinking is not coming from the deepest part of our mind, if it's not coming from that in the moment responsive intelligence, and the way you kind of know it is because it's in the moment and responsive to what's needed as opposed to arbitrary, then even better thinking just fills up our bandwidth. Even better thinking just fills up our headspace and makes it harder to do everything, even if it's really high quality thinking. Like, wow, I believe in myself. I love myself exactly as I am. I am enough. Well, great. But then there's still no room for fresh thinking about your golf game or your plumbing job or your business meeting or your radio show or whatever it is that you're actually up to in the moment, whatever game you're actually playing. Be like a hockey player who's continually affirming, you know, and then getting blindsided by people hip-checking them on the ice because they're up in their head trying to think positive thoughts, and they're not in the game. In the game, in the moment, responsive intelligence is right there playing with you. In your head, you're kind of on your own. And it feels like that. And it feels like the solution is I need to think even more. So better thinking isn't better. It might feel better because we do feel our thinking, and it certainly feels better up to a point to tell yourself, I am enough. I am enough. I am enough than it does to go, I am a worthless piece of crap. I am a worthless piece of crap. I'm a worthless piece of crap. But like, I don't know if you've got pets, and I don't know if you've ever done this, but like, pets respond entirely to tone and not at all to words, right? So, you know, there is a way with my dog. I can, if I just look at my dog, his tail starts wagging. But if I say things in a friendly tone of voice, his tail goes crazy. They go, oh, aren't you cute, Pepper? Aren't you? Oh, you're so sweet. You're such a sweet boy. And his tail goes and goes and goes. But it goes just as fast if I say, oh, aren't you an ugly dog? Aren't you a stupid little dog? You are the dumbest. You are not enough, Pepper. You have no worth or value in the world. And his tail will be wagging and wagging and wagging because he's responding to the feeling, not the words. And there is a feeling to our thinking in any moment. And if that feeling is expansive, if it's spacious, if it's kind of quiet at core, then that's the space in which we're feeling the space around our thoughts as much as we are our thoughts. And there's plenty of room for good stuff. There's plenty of room for new stuff to come through. But when our feeling is tight, even if it's kind of good tight, like I'm excited. Yeah, I'm really excited. Well, that's kind of letting us know, okay, the thinking's going. And if we're overwhelmed in any way, if we're stressed, if we're feeling pressure, that's the feeling of overthinking. That's the feeling of too much noise and not enough space. Because the spaciousness is the space through which fresh thought can come. The spaciousness is what allows us to see clearly. In the same way as if you held your hand in front of your eyes, it's hard to see. But if you open your fingers, you can see more. And if you open your fingers wide, you can see more. And if you pull your hand back, you can see more. Well, it's the same in our mind. We can go thought blind, where there's so much noise in head, there's so much thought in head that we can't see the wood for our trees. We don't have common sense. Because we can't really see anything beyond our own head, beyond our own head full of thought, beyond our own overthinking. So that's the problem with better thinking, trying to have better thinking. So the second thing that people try and do when they kind of get, boy, overthinking is potentially problematic, is they try to stop thinking, right? And they maybe take on a meditation practice or some other practice that's designed, an exercise practice, a yoga practice that's designed to stop their thinking. Well, if you actually stopped your thinking, you would be dead. Like that is, you know, one of the ways they measure life, proof of life, is that there is mental activity in the brain. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be cognizant of that mental activity, that you are aware of what you're thinking or anything like that. I'm just saying if your brain stops moving, if there stopped being energy up there, that's how we know that you're dead. So stopping thinking is kind of like the ultimate diet would just be to not eat, except for the fact that then you die. Right? So you could say, well, the ultimate mental diet is don't think, except for the fact that then you're dead. So it's not really a great strategy. And it's also not the way nature is intended, that nature works. So you think of thought like a stream. This is just a metaphor. It's like this, but not this. So in the thought stream, if you try and stop the thought stream, like that's trying to dam up a river. It is sort of possible, but it takes an incredible amount of work. It takes an incredible amount of energy. And the second there's any weakness in your dam, the river's going to run right through it. So not only does it take a ton of work to build the dam, but then it takes constant vigilance to maintain it, which is why most people's meditation practice lasts exactly as long as they're meditating. And there's not a lot of residual effect. It's like, that was a lovely 15 minutes. Okay, now back to work. Whereas if you don't see that the solution to overthinking as being stopping thinking, but as in being letting thought flow, then what you notice is thought flows. Thought naturally flows. You're not stuck with whatever thought you're having now. There'll be another one along in a minute, and then another one along in a minute, and then another one along in a second. Because that's just the nature of thought. It comes and it goes. The stream keeps going, and sometimes the stream has sticks in it or leaves on it. And so the sticks and leaves flow by. And if we get obsessed with a particular stick, or, oh no, not a stick from an oak tree. Oh no, not a maple leaf. Oh no, I've got to do something about that. I've got to replace the maple leaf with an oak leaf. Well, then that, we're sort of missing the flow. Right? We wade in and we start trying to control what the river's bringing us instead of enjoying the river. Maybe even going for a ride on the river. Letting the river bring us new things, different things. That's what's on offer when you start to understand how the mind works, how thought works. The river flowing is not overthinking. Obsessing with what's in the river is overthinking. And that brings us to our third category of, well, okay, how do I not overthink? Well, this is an interesting one to me, because it really sounds like there must be something to do. Like, well, how do I not do that? It's a little bit like saying, well, you know, how do I not breathe? Well, you can hold your breath, but that's not going to work long term. So how do I not overthink? Except our brains are brilliant sorting machines, sorting mechanisms. They are already set up to filter out what is unimportant and focus in on what is important. So if you've ever gone from country to city, from suburbs to downtown, or vice versa, you'll know that if you're used to a lot of noise, the quiet is kind of disturbing. And if you're used to quiet, the noise is really disturbing. But after you've been in the quiet for a while, you get used to it. And after you've been in the noise for a while, you get used to it. And you stop hearing it until somebody new comes to town, or you leave and come back and you suddenly go, God, it's noisy here. Because we're already designed to filter. We're already designed to move things along and to not pay attention to that which does not need attention paid to it. To ignore the background. You don't have to try to ignore it. You're already designed to. Whatever is background is background. You know, if you go to a restaurant and there are TVs on in the restaurant, which a lot of restaurants do, especially sports bars, things like that, it may seem like, oh God, how can anyone concentrate here? But you'll notice that people totally tune out the TVs after a while, unless they're there to watch TV, in which case they somehow tune out the bar noise and the restaurant noise, right? We're already made to do that. The reason that it feels like we need to do something about our overthinking is because we don't see that the content of our thinking is just not relevant. Right? The content of our thinking, and I don't mean that in the moment fresh stuff, that responsive, intelligent stuff. I mean 98% of the thoughts that go through your head every day, that go through my head every day, are not really relevant to a life well lived. And when you start to really see that, that voice in your head that thinks you're great, or thinks you're awful, or thinks you're enough, or thinks you're not enough, or thinks you can do it, or thinks you can't, is like having the TV on in the corner and, you know, one of these obscure cable channels that somehow broadcasts stuff all day long, and you wonder how they find the content, right? It's like, yeah, you might get caught up in it for a while and watch the show on, oh, I'm trying to think of one, like there's what I found myself watching for a while, where these guys go and they bid on storage lockers that have been abandoned, and they bid a certain amount, and you know, they get to own whatever's in the storage locker, And sometimes it's really cool stuff, and sometimes it's a waste of space. And that's one of those shows. I mean, look, I actually really enjoyed it, but I kind of get my life is not really richer for the time I've spent watching that show. But that's all of our thinking. Like, it's all, I mean, it might be interesting and it might be fun to pay attention to sometimes, but it's not moving us forward. It's not what's guiding us. It's not what will make our lives better. It's just noise in the head. And if there was a universal diagnosis for what people are up against, what we all suffer from, it's too much noise in head. Because that noise in head fills up our bandwidth, fills up our headspace, and makes it virtually impossible for us to hear our guiding wisdom, to see fresh thought, and to use common sense and just do what makes sense to do in the moment. If you want to get in, second half of the show, numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That is 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. Let me talk about a few events I have coming up. I haven't done this for a while, so some of you do not know what I am up to. So, next week, we are doing a small group coaching intensive here in Los Angeles called Infinite Potential, Infinite Possibilities. And we have two spaces left on that one. And that is a chance to be in a small group in my home and have me work with you on whatever it is you want to work on in your life for a few days. And you can find out more about that at michaelneal.org/infinite. There's also one coming up in London. I think we have one space left for the London one in May. Also next week, up in Portland, I'm going to do a business event. So if you're in the Pacific Northwest or want to come to the Pacific Northwest, my longtime friend, one-time apprentice, colleague Barb Patterson, who spent 20-plus years working in the corporate arena at very high-level executive. When I first started working with her, she was working in Paris for an international corporation. And we're doing a two-day workshop called A Good Life is Good for Business. And the sort of focus of the workshop is finding that sweet spot in us where we can actually enjoy whatever it is we're doing and do it to the best of our ability. And it turns out to be the secret of what I call effortless productivity. For those of you who've read Creating the Impossible, is that we do really well when we're enjoying what we're doing and we're engaged in it. And it almost doesn't matter what we do. Those two factors, enjoyment and engagement, they change everything. And so it's really about looking at how you can bring that into your business, whether you work for yourself, whether you work with others, whether you work for others, whether you have people that work for you. So that you can find out more about michaelneal.org/Portland. And then coming up in May, so there's another small group, again, in London. And then there's a conference. The 3P UK conference will be happening from the... I'm looking. It'll be happening from the 13th to the 15th of May. And that's a chance to see and hear from many of the sort of most established teachers and practitioners of the inside out understanding of the three principles of the stuff I talk about on this show every week. But also many of the newer practitioners get a voice there and get a chance to speak. And then on the 16th of May, I'm going to just get through May and then I'll stop. But on the 16th of May, Dickon Bettinger, who's been on this show before, has been on my podcast before. He and I will be doing a day in London, and that's sold out, but we've added a live stream, so you can still book to participate in that one online. And then finally, the weekend after, and the 18th and 19th, there's a 3P conference in Prague called Understanding Human Mind. And the first one of those we did last year, and if you've never been to Prague, it is a stunning city and a great place to watch. One last thing I will mention, Super Coach Academy Europe. Most of you know that Super Coach Academy is my kind of signature program. Tend to run it once a year, not every year, but most years. I've been running it since 2010. And this is the first time that I'm ever running it in Europe. And so you can learn more about that at supercoachacademy.com. Okay, back to overthinking. For me, one of the most helpful things that I've come to see is that for everything that I've said about how overthinking fills up our bandwidth and it makes it harder to do stuff and it kind of gets in the way of our in-the-moment responsive intelligence, it also is just something that you're going to do from time to time. Like your head will fill up with noise. And you won't seem to be able to do anything about it. You won't be able to not do it. You won't be able to do it better. You won't be able to stop it. It's just from time to time, your head will fill up with noise. And when it does, you're going to feel like life is hard and work is difficult and people are awful. And you're going to have all sorts of stuff that looks like it's to do with the world, but is actually just what the world looks like when your head is that noisy. And then there will be other times where your head clears. And you're just quiet. And you just kind of know what to do. And we all love those times of flow, those times of ease, those times where it feels effortless. And the rookie mistake that I probably made, I was a rookie for longer than anyone. I probably made this mistake for 20 plus years of studying this, was that I thought the goal was to always have a clear head and a clear mind. And I would just have to put up with the fact that sometimes my head filled up. What I've come to see is actually quite different than that. I can be effective and impactful when my head is full of noise, and I can be effective and impactful when my head is empty, to the extent that I don't put my energy and attention into emptying my head of noise. So in a way, the worst thing you can do when you're overthinking is try and think your way out of it. If you just know, okay, I'm overthinking, then it's kind of like, and I always hesitate to use this analogy. I think I actually used it last week. So I guess in for a penny, in for a pound, but it's kind of like being a little bit drunk. Like if you're drunk, but you know that you're drunk, you're not that drunk. You're just going to be more careful. If you're drunk, but you have no idea that you're drunk, you're going to be an idiot. Right? There's a great video. You can probably type Herm Edwards into, he's now the coach, football coach for University of Arizona. He used to coach for the New York Jets and used to play for the Philadelphia Eagles before that. But he gave this great talk at a rookie symposium in the NFL. And essentially, the talk was, don't press send. When you're mad at somebody and you're going to post something, you're going to text them, don't press send. When you're about to say something on social media about your coach, don't press send. And it was that recognition that when we kind of know we're in a state, we're fine. We can navigate that. We can move forward in spite of it. When we're in such a state that we don't even know we're in a state, that's when we get into trouble. So in a way, the most useful thing I found, the thing that's helped me the most around overthinking, is just to get a feel for what my life looks like and feels like when I'm overthinking it, which is really tight and restrictive and miserable, and my sense of humor goes, and it all seems very serious, and I've got to work it out, and I've got to figure it out. And that now has just sort of become a cue for, oh, okay, I'm up in my head, let me carry on with what I'm doing, and it'll clear, and when it clears, this will be fine. But then also having a sense for what it feels like when I'm really clear, when I'm really present. Because then I can just relax into it even more. And even more cool stuff comes to mind. And I'm even more present with the people I'm present with. And I can relate to them in a whole different way. And speaking of relating, let's do a little relating. Let us go to Toronto and let us speak with, I'm going to try this, Zainab. Zainab, how'd I do?
Perfect.
Okay, I'll take it. So
I actually called you before and used my nickname once, but anyway, Zina.
Well, you know, I could call you Big Z, I guess. But no, Zainab, what kind of name is Zainab? I've never heard that before.
It's Arabic, so it's a Muslim name. Yeah.
Cool. What does it mean? And what would it translate to?
I was told it means beautiful from the inside out, but I think it also means a blossoming tree.
Either of those work, but I think, you know, beautiful. I'd go with that. That sounds cool. So what are we going to talk about today, Zainab?
Well, I just thought it was really interesting how you're talking about overthinking, considering in the past couple of days, I've been doing a lot of overthinking. and I noticed that even when things are going really well, when you could be overjoyed, that then the overthinking starts to creep in. Maybe not for everyone, but for me it does sometimes. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I'm feeling this great. And then your body kind of feels weird because you're not used to feeling that great. And then you start thinking about, well, what does that mean? Oh, am I too happy? And then you start feeling a little less happy. Well, now should I be more happy?
Well, look, Zainab, the first bit of good news is the fact that you're laughing at it means you can at least kind of see it.
Yeah. And I was just thinking that it seems like this whole overthinking thing is like constant commentary on your life, how it's going. And it just seems like, are we overthinking because we're thinking too much about ourselves? And then in relation to other people, their opinions, what we think other people will think. So like imagine scenarios instead of just like, what would it be like if we just stopped focusing on ourselves and just went through our day consciously, still present, but doing things and not in relation to what do I think this means for me or how does it impact me or affect me? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's two things that come from that, and they're both, I think, really cool. One, what you've kind of identified is what is at the core of most spiritual teaching. There was a quote, and I'm gonna get this wrong, but it won't be massively wrong. There was a Canadian sage who went by the name of Wei Wu Wei. He was a Taoist sage. I can't remember his real name. He might have been English, but lived in Canada. I love his writing. And he had a quote that I used to use all the time, which is that, you know, the reason that that you can't solve your problems is that 99.9% of your problems are about you, and you don't exist. Right, and that's kind of what I hear in what you're saying is, yeah, if I take me off the table, mm-hmm. if I take me off the agenda, if I take me off the to-do list, I have a lot of free time.
It's like, what else is left now? What do I want to do?
Right, and but that's just it. It turns out that what else is left is life.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no question that as people begin to wake up to the illusion of the separate self. And again, I get you have a name, you have a body, you have a life, right? I'm not saying that you don't exist in that form, but that's right. Not a permanent thing.
No.
That's something that comes and goes. I mean, even our bodies are completely different every 7 years.
That's
but
true.
They look constant. Our thinking changes every moment, but it feels constant. Mm-hmm. Right? Our sense of self, our self-image either changes throughout our life or stays the same while we change. And we don't notice until the discrepancy is so pronounced that we just feel really uncomfortable and we don't know who we are anymore.
Right. Well, either that where you meet somebody like in your family or someone you've known for a really long time but you haven't seen forever and then they think you've changed so much. And it's
absolutely.
Like, well, you don't realize it, but...
Or the opposite of that, where you meet somebody who you used to, like a lot of people have this experience after they leave home and go back to see their parents, and they find themselves reverting to their 17-year-old self, even though they've been out on their own and living life in a completely different way for years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
Why do we do that, though?
Well, we do that because it's a very persistent illusion that's reinforced by the culture that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
That was an Albert Einstein quote. It's actually one of my favorite Einstein quotes, that reality is an illusion, albeit a very persistent one.
Right.
And people tell you, hey, you've got to work on yourself. You need self-esteem. You need to value yourself. And really what they mean is this illusory separate thing that we call me.
Yeah.
We need to make it even more of a thing. When actually what we don't see is that the less we make of it, the more present we are to life. So one of my favorite definitions, I used to hate the word humility. I used to find humility so tightly linked in my mind to shame that I'd bristle when the word came up. And then Sid Banks, who's the guy who sort of first articulated the inside out understanding, I heard him say, humility isn't thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you're thinking, oh, I want to have humility, you're putting yourself on this, I'm not on a pedestal, but I'm put myself up there and say, I'm humble and all of this kind of stuff. But then you are thinking more about yourself.
Yeah, and you can tell how humble I am because it's a very simple pedestal. Right. Now here's the other part of it, Zainab, to me that I think is really interesting is that we think that if we don't think about ourselves, all hell will break loose. We won't be able to navigate. We won't have a good life. We will be miserable. We will be walked over. We will, like, we have this whole set of stories about how dangerous it would be to not be continually thinking about ourselves.
So we're creating meaning around things that could be meaningless if we wanted them to be.
Well, I would actually say it as we're creating meaning around things that are inherently meaningless, which makes them easy to project meaning onto. And the reason I think that distinction is even relevant is because if life is just life, right? If there's no inherent meaning, direction, and purpose in it, then all we are ever doing is living and making up stories about life.
And what happens if we stop making up stories?
You live more. You feel more alive.
Screw the self. Just live.
Well, and this is the funny thing, right? It's a very funny thing to say on Hay House Radio because you know, some people will hear screw the self as, oh no, that's what I was doing my whole life before I came across this stuff. I was ignoring myself and I was putting myself down. But we're not saying screw the self and we're not saying ignore yourself. We're saying there is no self.
Exactly. I mean, it's like screw the self in the sense of even screw the stupid ideas you have about yourself. If you don't have those, then isn't that where self-love would be?
Well, because then what we identify with as self is very different. Because when we stop identifying with the little me, we start to kind of see, oh my God, we're an ocean, not just a wave. So I think you're onto something.
It's just your talking. It just made me think.
Yeah.
A lot.
That's very cool, Zainab.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you used your real name this time. Take care.
Okay.
So another one of my coaching apprentices turned colleague, Jamie Smart, has a great analogy for the difference between getting this at a fundamental level that will change things for the better and kind of getting the idea and trying to apply it. And so imagine that you are a coach, right? That's what you do. You're a life coach. And a dog comes to you. And says, hey, I want to hire you. And you're like, oh my God, a talking dog. Cool. Can he pay? Sure. All right. I'll take the gig. And so you go to the dog. Okay. Well, what do you want to hire me for? And he goes, well, I have a nemesis and my nemesis follows me around everywhere I go and taunts me. And the thing is, he's so fast and he's so clever, and it's almost like he's in my head. He knows what I'm going to do before I do it, and I can never catch him no matter how hard I chase him. And so I want you to help me. I want you to coach me on speed, because maybe if I was just a little bit faster, I'd be able to catch him. And I want you to coach me on stealth, because maybe if I could sneak up on my nemesis, I would be able to get him. And I want you to coach me to be more unpredictable, right? So that, you know, he can't guess what I'm going to do before I do it. And because you're a good coach and you're very observant and you're very present and you're not too much in your own head and you're not overthinking it, you notice that his nemesis is his own tail. And so you say to him, look, I don't know how to break this to you, but you're chasing your own tail. That's the problem. Now, if the dog gets it, if the dog really sees, oh my goodness, all of this angst and all of this pressure and all of this stress is just me not recognizing that I'm chasing my own tail, then, you know, he's going to look a little sheepish. He's going to slap himself in the forehead with his paw and go, doo! And he's going to thank you and, you know, and give you a good lick, and off he goes to have a better life. But if he gets it intellectually, he understands the concept, and that then he'll say, oh, that's very interesting. Okay, so I'm chasing my own tail. So how do I stop doing that? How do I do it better? How do I get myself to, how do I remind myself to not chase my tail? And it's actually very much the same with overthinking. When you see overthinking for what it is, which is an absolutely useless thing that we're all in the habit of doing from time to time, then it's pretty easy to drop when you see it. It's like, oh, there I go again. Oh, well, okay. Well, my head will clear at some point, and then it'll be clear, and I'll have my common sense back, and I'll have my in-the-moment responsive intelligence back, and I'll just kind of get on. But in the meantime, I can carry on and just do what I do as best I can. But if you think that the content of your thinking, your overthinking matters, if you think, I'm not overthinking, I've just got a lot to think about. If you had my life, you would be thinking about it too. Well, then it sounds like a nice idea that maybe you could practice. Maybe there's some exercises to work on. Maybe there are some things you can do. Sort of, it's similar. Like I, when I was first learning about this, it used to make me smile that people would come to me and they'd go, you know, I listened to your show, or I came to your seminar, and that was really helpful. I'm worrying a lot less than I used to. Which to my mind always sounded like somebody saying to me, hey, I came to, you know, I listened to the radio show where you talked about stabbing yourself in the leg with a fork, and that was really interesting, and I'm stabbing myself in the leg with a fork much less than I used to. It's like, on the one hand, I'm really glad you're stabbing yourself in the leg with a fork less than you used to. On the other hand, you might want to just stop stabbing yourself in the leg with a fork. Right? If you really saw that's what was going on, you would never do it on purpose. Now, we don't always overthink on purpose, but it is amazing how often we add thinking to our thinking because we think it's a good idea. We think we can think our way out of it. We think we can think our way through it. There's another quote that I don't know if this is a real Einstein quote, but it's attributed to Einstein a lot, which is, you can't solve a problem at the level of thinking that created it. Well, that seems to me to be true. That I might say it a little differently. I might say you can't solve a problem at the level of consciousness that created it. But either way, thinking more to the left when the answer is to the right is never going to work. I think Tony Robbins had a great line about it. He said, you can head east your entire life looking for a sunset and you'll never find one. You're never going to find fresh thought. You're never going to find peace of mind. You're never going to find the spacious quiet of pure consciousness in your thinking. Thinking more is just going to fill that space up more. It's not going to get you anywhere. And when you see that, to the extent that you see that, you'll just do it less. Not never, because sometimes our heads just fill up. We got habitual thoughts. But less. And it will be less of a big deal when you do. When I used to teach this in corporate and give talks, one of the ways that I would talk about it is I talk about it in terms of sort of three outcomes. There are three things that come from seeing this. And the first is you find yourself at your best more of the time. Because you're not so inclined to indulge in your overthinking, to fix your overthinking, to try to cope with your overthinking, you'll just find yourself overthinking less and being present more, being available to this innate intelligence, this responsive wisdom more. The second thing, the second outcome that I would talk to them about is you'll do less damage when you're off your game. Because when you know that the world looks the way it looks because your head is just full of noise, you're less inclined to take it out on the world. You're less inclined to hit send on that angry text, angry Facebook post, angry whatever it is. You're less inclined to believe yourself when you think, well, I'm really angry. Now would be a great time to go talk to my boss about my job. Well, I am really just fed up with the world. Now would be a great time to talk with my partner about our relationship. Well, I just hate everything. Now would be a great time to make major life decisions. It's actually the exact opposite. When you start to see overthinking for what it is, you just kind of ride it easier. And you kind of know, hey, probably not the best time to make major life decisions, talk to my boss, talk to my partner, try to work everything out on a fundamental level in my life. In the same way as hopefully you have enough sense to know if you've had a drink or two, not to get in a car. Right? Not a good time for that. So as we see more about what this is and how it works, we automatically behave more in line with what works. We are at our best more of the time. We do less damage when we're off our game. And then the third thing is we recognize the same thing in the people around us. We can start to see, to feel, to sense when they're up in their heads and overthinking. And we're less inclined to respond to the specific things that they bring to us. You know, well, you did this and you need this and I can't move forward in this. And normally, as helpful friends or coaches or advisors or colleagues, we're inclined to address, oh my God, well, yeah, okay, you can do this. And we get frustrated because it doesn't matter what we say. They go, but you don't understand this. Yeah, but I tried that. Yeah, but I can't. When we see that what's actually going on is just overthinking, then we're just not inclined to try and fix it by addressing the individual thoughts. We know it'll settle. We may or may not talk to them about it because we know it'll settle by itself. And we're not inclined to try and have big conversations about big things when their head's in a total mess. In the same way as you don't negotiate with an alligator when your head is in its mouth. You don't talk sense to a barking dog. You wait for it to quiet down. You wait to get your head out of the alligator's mouth. And then if it still seems like a good idea, you can have a conversation. And you can have quite a deep conversation, because when you're in that space in you and they're in that space in them, there's only one of you. And there's a natural connection and a natural understanding that just emerges, that's just revealed. So, hope you have enjoyed the show. I will be back, not next week, but the week after, with another brand new show. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you.